This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Kenirie. Thanks for joining us. New cases of COVID-19 are on the rise in many parts of the country. Florida state health officials reported 10,105 new cases on Sunday. That's the largest single-day increase since July 25th. Over the past 7 days, the single-day average has increased to 5,887. The average number of daily deaths reported over the past week grew to 57 a day. There have now been more than 885,000 reported cases of the virus in Florida since the pandemic began, and 17,734 people have died here. As the outbreak continues, researchers and doctors continue working to find new ways to treat the disease. Since the end of April, Lee Health has been testing the use of convalescent plasma. It's taken from the blood of people who have recovered from COVID-19 and then infused into people who are sick with it to hopefully reduce the severity of the disease. To get an update on its use and their efforts to solicit donors, I spoke with Lee Health infectious disease Dr. Doug Brust on Friday. As always, you can engage with the show and fellow listeners about our conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media's page and on Twitter. We're at WGCU. Just use the hashtag GCL. Let's hear that conversation now. Dr. Doug Brust, welcome to Gulf Coast Life.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
So when we talked to you last time about convalescent plasma, the FDA had just issued an emergency use authorization for its use, which at the time was sort of stymieing the trial that you were participating in with Mayo Clinic. So what's unfolded since then?
So since then, the trial with Mayo Clinic actually closed. And actually what was really stymieing was the trial with Hopkins. That once the convalescent plasma became available, widely available, enrolling in other clinical trials became problematic because, you know, people did not want to get a placebo, obviously, because they could get active drug. And this is always a problem with any clinical trial that has uses an open label approach. So since that time at Lee Health, we're still encouraging people to donate. So if you have had COVID-19 and have recovered, please consider donating blood. We'll be able to use the red cells, but also the plasma. The antibodies in the plasma are useful in patients that have COVID-19 and have been admitted. What we've learned from the large retrospective study from Mayo is that, once again, the earlier you use antibody in this disease, the better. So it looks like you really need to use convalescent plasma early in disease. And early in disease, within the first 72 hours. At Lee Health, we're even trying to get it in earlier because we think there's two phases to the disease process. You know, the virus replicates, and neutralizing antibodies can stop viral replication, they can attach to the receptor and prevent the virus from entering the cell, its host cell, so it can't replicate. And antivirals like Remdesivir actually directly work to prevent replication. In the sort of pathogenesis of the disease, there's, we think, two phases. The beginning part is mediated by the virus, and then later on is mediated by the host response. So if you give convalescent plasma later in the course of disease, patients probably already have built their own antibody because they've had the virus long enough that they have a normal immune response. They'll build antibody. And giving a little bit more antibody is not going to be helpful. And that's sort of been borne out by clinical trials. So we're still looking for people to donate so that we have a supply here at Lee Health. If you donate through Lee Health, and I think you guys will have the information on the email, the best way to email, or if you want to call and leave a message, and we'll get back to you about donating.
Is donating as simple as like going in to give blood?
Donating is giving blood. So the way we do it here is we don't do plasmapheresis, so we do a donation of blood, and that donation of blood, we are able to transfuse people with red cells and also get the plasma for convalescent plasma.
Some people who get COVID-19 don't exhibit symptoms. Those people are not able to be participating in this donation, correct?
You have to have a positive test. So you either have to have had a positive antibody test and be asymptomatic, or you have had to have a positive swab and be asymptomatic.
Just back up real quick, just for listeners who haven't listened to our previous conversations, just remind listeners, about this idea of convalescent plasma and how long it's been around.
So convalescent plasma, the idea, it's transferring immunity. So the idea has, you know, been around even since the first flu pandemic back in 1918, where if it's important to recover from a given disease, if antibodies are important, antibodies are proteins that our body builds specific to a pathogen, to a germ that we have, and if antibodies are the pathway that the body eliminates that pathogen, antibodies, if they're important, then we know that if you take antibody from one person that was sick and recovered and give it to another person that's sick but hasn't had time to build antibody, you may improve the sick person's course. So it's a transfer of immunity from one person to the other by literally just taking plasma, which contains antibody, and giving plasma to another person that doesn't have antibody.
Does the plasma that you extract, or however, whatever the proper term is there, do you test it for the level of antibodies that are present in it?
So now, right now we do. And that was what the major change between the Mayo study demonstrated, that there was a difference in outcome between people that had high titer antibody and lower titer antibody. So we actually now titer the antibody and look to see whether or not it's high or low titer. Now we're giving low, because of availability, we are giving low titer plasma. We don't know whether it will help or not help, but there is a hint that compared to nothing, it does help.
I've seen some reports that people may not retain antibodies after having had COVID-19. Is there a point at which it's been so long since you've recovered that you're not able to donate, or is that even in this equation yet?
Well, you have to be antibody positive. So if your antibodies are negative, you cannot donate.
Understood.
We would not use that plasma bag. So once you donate, if you show that you've had the disease, and it's rare, but we do get units where when people donate, that when we test them for antibodies, we don't find antibodies. And so those units we would not use. But those units can still be used as fresh frozen plasma.
Understood. So who gets it, you know, in terms of treatment? What is sort of the schedule for who's going to get
get? For convalescent plasma, the emergency use authorization limits it to people that are admitted to the hospital. And essentially that if you're admitted to the hospital, you're potentially eligible to get convalescent plasma. Because it's such a limited resource, we have to restrict its use according to which population would benefit the most. And what we now know is that people that, from the clinical trials that have been done and the open label study that was done by Mayo, that people that are on oxygen but not necessarily being mechanically ventilated, severe need for oxygen, the people that are early in disease need it the most. Now recall, just because you get admitted doesn't mean you're going to get guaranteed to get plasma, because there's multiple, it's a timing issue, whether or not we have your blood type, because you have to match plasma by blood type, and whether or not you fit that sort of criteria for how sick you are.
I think when I spoke to you last time, you said that there might be a chance down the road that the blood type specific thing might not be part of this. Is that something that you're still looking toward?
Right, that still has not changed.
That still hasn't changed.
So it's not specifically blood type matches compatible blood type, but that has not changed.
Understood. And I know there have been some randomized controlled trials happening around the world with convalescent plasma. You know, what are you following with that in terms of a more refined study?
So there are more refined studies that have looked at it with people that have been hospitalized and that have been really sick, and the impact is minimal, if any. So it's really looking at people that are early, almost outpatients, that we think we're going to get the most benefit from. And that's sort of a segue into, so convalescent plasma is a mixed, it's literally a mixed bag of antibody. It's all the antibodies that an individual produces. Some of those antibodies are neutralizing. They actually bind to the virus and somehow prevent the virus from replicating, from entering the cell or from doing some other specific task that it needs to do in order to replicate. Those are neutralizing antibodies, and others are non-neutralizing. The most important ones are neutralizing antibodies. So what scientists have done is that they, from convalescent plasma, they've isolated specific neutralizing antibodies and actually manufacture them as monoclonal antibodies. And so that segues us nicely into another medication from Lilly that's an monoclonal antibody that just received emergency use authorization 2 days ago.
And that is the, I'm going to have you say it first.
Bamlanivimab.
And so I was going to ask.
Bam. Just remember Emerald.
Are they going to come up with a nickname for that, I presume? Because that's hard.
I hope so.
And so I was going to ask then. So that is sort of derived from the plasma, the antibodies.
So the original antibody was derived from plasma, but then it was tested in the laboratory. And being tested in the laboratory to see that it was very effective at neutralizing the virus. So you're able to genetically manufacture it. So it's a process, but we can make monoclonal antibodies. Many of the intravenous medication. You need to get it put through an infusion. We use monoclonal antibodies to treat many different diseases, a lot of rheumatological diseases. You see anything that ends in a mab, M-A-B, monoclonal antibody, is a medicine that is usually an infused medication. And for rheumatological disease, Crohn's disease, we use monoclonal antibodies frequently now. It's pretty intensive to make this therapy, and it's also very expensive. So what happened was Lilly got this one antibody. It's a 555. They designated it, and they manufactured it, and they looked in clinical trials. And in people that were hospitalized, as anticipated, it didn't help for people that were really sick. But for outpatients that really just were diagnosed with COVID within 3 days and only had minimum symptoms, it actually clinically helped prevent them from going into the hospital at day 28. So what they looked at was they looked at three different doses of this antibody, monoclonal antibody, and people that were not that sick, outpatients. Not requiring oxygen. You know, again, they were not admitted to the hospital, and they randomized to either one of the three doses or to a placebo, to sugar infusion. And what the clinical outcome was is they looked at day 28, and what percentage of the people that enrolled in the study, and there was about 452 people that were on the study, what percentage of the people that got antibody had to go to the emergency room or be admitted to the hospital. And at day 28, for all comers, if you got placebo, 6% of the people had to be admitted or go to the emergency room for a visit versus 2% of people that got active antibody. And if you look at high-risk individuals, those are people that are older, obese, have diabetes, have cardiovascular disease, the impact was greater. In this small study, we have no statistics. It was 10% of the people that were given placebo versus 3% that got active antibody. So based on these very limited data, the FDA authorized emergency use authorization for this in the outpatient setting, bamlanivimab for outpatient setting. And remember, the availability of this drug, as far as I know, is extremely limited. You know, we might only have one or two doses for all of Lee Health. So it's just unfolding right now how much the availability is going to be and who we would be able to give it to.
The EUA, the emergency use authorization, was based, from what I read, on a phase 2 study. Is that common for an EUA to be issued that early along?
So most phase 2 studies only have limited information about clinical efficacy. And so I'm not sort of an FDA sort of expert to say how often you get an EUA, you know, based only on phase 2, because EUAs are rare. So the answer is I would think you'd want more sort of phase 3 data, but they did have some clinical data. They had virologic data. And they also had clinical data. So it was just based on very limited amount of data. And again, it's probably going to be a very expensive drug. Monoclonal antibodies are expensive drugs. And so we just have to see. Lilly is providing, I think, do not quote me, 50,000 doses throughout the United States free a small number of doses, and it's being allocated by the Department of Health in each state. But I think, once again, do not quote me, I think we got something like 3,800 doses somewhere in Florida, I heard. And, you know, that's for all the hospitals here. So there's going to be very few doses of this to start off with.
Is it reasonable to assume that the places in the United States that are ramping up cases right now are going to be who gets the most of it?
Yes.
And the important thing to go back to is that this is something that can be manufactured, so you don't need to have volunteers come in and donate
That's
something.
That's exactly right. But while, but we still, because there's such a limited amount of this drug, we still need people to come in. And it's sort of a proof of point for people that it's still a proof of concept, excuse me, for convalescent plasma, that within convalescent plasma, there is, in some people's, this exact antibody. And that's why they just enriched by making a monoclonal antibody.
Is this?
Remember, one thing I want to just add is that every medication has a side effect. So we really don't know much about the side effects from this because it was a small phase two. So, you know, we have to keep, you know, make sure that it's going to be safe also to give.
Is this bamlanivimab something that you had been tracking, or was it something that you have just recently learned
about?
No.
We've all been tracking these because it's a natural progression. Usually what happens is you get convalescent plasma. Then you sort of, we've skipped a step. There's also going to be hyperimmune globulin that really is concentrated, you know, gathered from multiple people for antibodies from people that have been exposed. So concentrated antibody. And then it goes to a specific antibody to make a monoclonal. And then the next stage in the progression is a vaccine, because that vaccine makes antibodies within the person before they get exposed.
Is there anything else that you're tracking that we haven't heard about yet?
Well, you've actually heard about the monoclonal antibody cocktail that President Trump got. That was by Regeneron, and that's a similar concept, and they also put in for emergency use authorization that contains two neutralizing antibodies rather than one. And there are multiple other, you know, different drugs that are in all stages of development. It's beyond the scope of our discussion and where they are and whether, every company is out there trying to look at different pathways to really protect the lungs and really protect people from severe disease.
What are your thoughts on the Pfizer vaccine that they announced this, sort of relatively small stage three or phase three trial data?
Right. We need to see data. we need to see data. So, of course, it's encouraging. The encouraging note about it is, once again, you know, it's a proof of concept. If there really is 90% protection, that means that that antibody is very important in the pathophysiology of this disease. Not every single pathogen, every virus, is antibody important as far as the development of a treatment or a vaccine. So antibody looks like it's important for SARS-CoV-2.
From what I understand, a vaccine could have a 0.05% problem rate, and you're not going to necessarily see that with 300 or 400 people in a trial, but you might start to see it when you go big. So they're going to have to, when it comes to a vaccine and emergency use authorization during times like this, is there a chance, do you think, that it could go into widespread use without having a really large trial?
I don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you, because you're exactly right that, rare side effects can be very serious, and they're just that, they're rare. So if you have a small trial, you may not pick up those rare side effects. So I don't know what the approach is going to be. I know that the phase three vaccine trials, though, are sort of standard numbers that they've used before. So we're going to have to let this play out. And I think we, as we get more information, we have to reevaluate at each stage.
So we are seeing a surge in new cases, in some parts of the country, a lot of parts of the country, as we head into winter. What are your thoughts on that? And does Florida stand a better chance of not seeing a huge surge because we're not cold, so therefore, huddling indoors?
Well, I think the biggest part is the part that you bring up is about huddling indoors. I think we've demonstrated that, warm weather doesn't discourage this virus. I think it's more whether we are close in winter, whether we're inside. I think there's evolving data that demonstrate that being close inside, you know, with bad circulation of air is when you can have transmission. We'll keep our fingers crossed. You know, there's a prediction. This is, you know, the second wave. Is it the first wave that sort of has never gone away? When you talk about waves of viruses, you usually like to see the virus completely go away and then come back again. And it really has never gone away. I'm hoping that we do better than other areas of the country, but we're also going to, you know, have an influx of people coming from up north down to Florida. So, you know, we have to be very vigilant with wearing masks, washing our hands, and staying quarantined as best as you can. And you have to live your life.
And we're having a very summer-like winter, so people are still huddling indoors just in the air conditioning instead of the heat.
If air conditioning might be helpful, but you know, hopefully, you know, you can argue both ways for the warm weather. I don't think the issue, though, of the virus itself being more vulnerable to heat has panned out to say, you know, that's, you know, down in Florida or in warm climates, in countries with warm climates, they're not worrying about the virus as much as those with colder climates.
How are things looking at Lee Health in terms of caseload and resources and just, you know, overall staff, you know, mental health and moral support?
I really can't comment on the staffing situation. I think we're fine, but, you know, that is definitely not my specialty. And, you know, we have about 100 inpatients, I think, the other day. So they're starting to climb. We've been below 100 for quite a bit of time. And so it's starting to climb, so we're keeping a close eye on it. But staffing right now and, you know, PPE and access to, you know, getting in and admitted to the hospital has not been an issue. I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but as far as I've heard, there's no issues.
Okay, and just one last back to convalescent plasma. So people, you need donors. Can you handle as many as people would show up?
Yes, we need as many donors as possible. We really do. So we want to put the – because we can't – with the change – I'm not going to get into the mud on this, but with the change, the blood banking industry is highly regulated and the way that plasma units are labeled. So with the change from the Mayo Clinic investigational plasma units to the emergency use authorization plasma units, that change really impacted our supply. So – right now, we can only use plasma that we get from the community. We can't resource it from anywhere else. We have to use it from our own community because it's not being labeled correctly. With what we had mentioned before is that now we do titers, and the FDA required a specific test to do, one specific test, and, you know, not every place was geared up to do it. We were lucky at Lee Health that we did have that antibody titer test. So we had it here and we were able to access it.
You know, other than doing public outreach to try to get people to come in and donate blood, do people who have recovered receive contact from Lee Health saying, hey, this is an option for you, or does it even work way?
We do blast and we reach out to people and they get it when they're, you know, they're being discharged. But I think the best way to do it is still just through the media to remind people.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have. I want to thank my guest. Dr. Doug Brust is an infectious disease doctor with Lee Health. Dr. Brust, thank you for your time and insights as always.
All right. I really appreciate it.
This interview was recorded last Friday morning, so the news about the Moderna vaccine had not been announced yet, and the weekend surge in new cases of COVID-19 here in Florida hadn't been reported yet. Florida state health officials reported 10,105 new cases on Sunday. That is the largest single-day increase in reported infections here in Florida since the end of July. Visit our website for the post for this show to get information about how to donate if you have recovered from COVID-19, or you can call 239-334-2332. If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, wgcu.org/GCL, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Kinirie. This is NPR for Southwest Florida, 90.1 WGCU FM, Fort Myers, Naples, and Port Charlotte, and 91.7 WMKO Marco Island, a member-supported service of Florida Gulf Coast University. Thank you.